Hi everyone, I'm Claire. I'm a grateful compulsive overeater. Today's workshop is the doctor's opinion from the big book. Very happy to welcome our speaker today, Amy. Thank you, Amy.
Hi everyone. This is so exciting, translators and everything. What an honor and a privilege to be here and to share with you all today. I just, you know, big universal hug and so happy to be here. You all are my fellowship, my people, and I'm so grateful. This program has absolutely saved my life. My name is Amy G. I am a recovered compulsive eater from Maryland, and I am grateful to be here. Thank you to everyone who's organized this. So grateful to be here to share my experience, strength, and hope, and you know what I have learned from the doctor opinion. I attend many Overeaters Anonymous meetings, but one of my home groups is the Vision for You OA meetings that are on the phone Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. And 10 a.m. And we go through the big book, paragraph by paragraph. So some of you all may wonder why the big book. It's the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, it is a conference-approved literature in Overeaters Anonymous. And for me, it describes the steps and what my illness is as a compulsive overeater very clearly. And if I take out the word alcohol and alcoholism, and put in the word from food and compulsive eater, you then describe me. And one of the reasons why the doctor's opinion is so important to me is that he clearly, as a doctor, describes the illness of compulsive overeater as I understand it. For me, it brought, along with Overeaters Anonymous literature, it brings to me a clarity and an understanding of my illness of compulsive overeating and why that I need these 12 steps that I can't save or fix myself if I am a true compulsive eater with a physical allergy and a mental obsession. And we'll get into that in more detail. So just so you can get to know me a little bit, I came to Overeaters Anonymous, it's qualify, so to speak, since you can only see me from here up or whatever. I came to Overeaters Anonymous in March of 1983, and I did not become recovered until almost 5 years later in December of 1987. And when I say recovered, I mean, I'm not saying that I'm cured by any way, shape, or form. What I'm saying is, and it's actually the definition of abstinence that Overeaters Anonymous has, which is refraining from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors while working towards or maintaining a healthy body weight, you know, physical and emotional and spiritual recovery. And I add there, doing so happily, right? Never in my wildest imagining did I think there would be time that I wouldn't be obsessed with food, weights, scales, the numbers on the scale ruling my life, where food wasn't constantly calling me. And I have that today by the grace of God, my higher power, and these 12 steps. You know, that 4 years, I mean, not going to go into this whole eatalog for before that, but trust me, I've done everything there is to do this disease. My top weight was 170, and then I just didn't get on the scale for a while. They call it the three D's of the disease: denial, delusion, and defiance. So I just said, well, I'm not getting on the scale. And then and I probably put on another 20 pounds, so pushing 200. And then my lowest weight as an anorexic, which is the other manifestation for me, was at 102. So I definitely know that number. Driving in the car with in the summer with a jacket on, with the heat on, that's 30 pounds less than what my normal weight is. And by far and away, my worst manifestation of this illness was bulimia, where I was purging 10 and 12 times a day. I couldn't keep anything in my stomach. I mean, I am a bottle in the bag, living underneath the bridge, compulsive eater, right? I'm also a drug addict and alcoholic. I mean, are you catching my drift here? If there was any way to anesthetize myself, escape myself, fill the hole in my soul with any mood altering substances, I did it. But my primary addiction is compulsive eating. And I'm so grateful because this program has totally saved my life. But like I said, you know, I spent almost 5 years in Overeaters Anonymous struggling with a couple of things. One was my agnosticism and truly surrendering to my powerlessness. I thought that once I knew and I understood what compulsive eating was, or it could use my willpower, that somehow I would be smart enough to fix myself. I didn't understand the true nature of my illness. I also, you know, was about half measures. You know, sometimes I think there's a bit of a misnomer in the program when we say, you know, this is a program of suggestions. It's not a program of suggestions. It is a suggested program. And if I choose to embark on this suggested program, I darn well better work the steps, right? To me, this is an all-in program. And it talks about it in another chapter, how it works, which someone will be covering in masterful detail, one of my favorite speakers tomorrow on the chapter, how it works. But it says half measures avail us nothing, right? We stood at the turning point. You know, the result was nil until we let go absolutely. And for me, here's an example. If I want a diet soda, let's say from the soda machine, and it's $1.25, you know, I can put in up to $1.24. And I'm still not going to get the soda. This is a 12-step program. If I don't work the 12 steps, then I'm not going to get what the promises are in the program, and I'm not going to recover. But that's the way I tried to work it. I tried to work it, as they say in the program, buffet style. You know, I'll take a little of this step and that step, and oh, steps 8 and 9, sure, when hell freezes over, right? Like, I'm not doing that. So I got nothing, and I got torturous hell of compulsive eating in Overeaters Anonymous. You know, I love sayings and slogans, and they say, OA is like the mafia. Once you get in, you never get out, and it ruins all your binges because you know too much. And that's what I spent, the torture and hell of compulsive eating, until I finally surrendered to this program in its totality and being willing to work it. I had a wonderful sponsor. Little bit of tough love. And she said, Amy, if your way is working so well, why are you here? And I had to finally concede to myself that I could not fix myself. But what did that mean? It admitted that I was powerless. And if I'm a powerless compulsive eater, what does it mean to be a powerless compulsive eater? And that's what I love about the doc op. That's what we call it in short, the doc op. It's because in this book, Alcoholics Anonymous, they have the doctor who brings legitimacy to what it is in the infancy of Alcoholics Anonymous and what was working. And what also brings to the forefront here is the fact that this illness consists of two things, a physical allergy and a mental obsession. And, you know, because we have translation and I talk too fast anyways, I'm going to revamp about how many paragraphs and things that I read. But I'm going to encourage you all to, you know, read the doctor's opinion on your own and try to understand and grasp what it is that that I'm talking about here and what I have learned in the process of working these 12 steps and studying this big book. And because what's really important that I didn't understand those first 5 years is that, one, I have a physical allergy. And what that means, and it says it very clearly in the big book. So we're going to go to the doctor's opinion here. We're going to go to, let's go to the second page. I know everyone has these different versions depending on what edition you have. But at the end of the letter from William B. Silkworth, the doctor, is the paragraph that starts the physician who. What I want to get to is the second sentence that says, in this statement, he confirms that we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe that the body of the alcoholic is quite abnormal as his mind. And I had to truly grasp that when I put certain ingredients into my body, I had an allergic reaction. He talks about it down in the next paragraph, and he repeats it throughout the chapter about having an allergy. And what is this allergy? It's not breaking out in hives or a rash. To me, it's a phenomenon, and explained in here, of craving for more. More of what? My allergic substance, my ingredients that I put, my binge foods. What that means, or you can call it your alcoholic binge foods or your crack foods, you know, was any substance that had sugar, high fat, flour, volume. Now, I'm not going to get into all the details of food plans and things like that, but at some point I had to understand that there were certain foods I could never eat in moderation, because when I ingested them, I created this allergy that the doctor talks about, for a phenomenon of craving for more. That's what that allergic reaction means. Now, sugar, high fat, and volume were sugar, high fat, and flour were pretty clear to me, but volume was a big issue for me as a bulimic. Volume could trigger me just as easily as the other substances. I'm an unabashed weigher and measurer, and I have been for 35 years now, because I need to know when my meal starts and when my meal stops. And I need to know that it has none of my ingredients that create that phenomenon of craving for more. My body is not wired like everyone else's. Again, it's repeated again and again and again in the doctor's op, in the doc op, that my body is not wired, that I am not like. To be considered that this is just a mental thing is not sufficient if I'm still eating my binge foods. Again, what is incredibly important is that I have to have a line in the sand for me, what is abstinent and what is not. You know, in AA, they put the plug in the jug. In OA, I need to know what jug to put the plug in. And that is a clear line in the sand. Not everyone abstinence is the same. I get that. That's completely understandable. But I will say that I need to know that I am not eating what those ingredients are. And if you're a newcomer on the line, you know, that's what a sponsor is for. That's what a nutritionist and a dietitian is for. This program isn't all about abstinence, but the reason why they put the doc op in the beginning is to understand that without abstinence, which is a prerequisite, right? Without abstinence, I got nothing. I don't eat my way through the steps and then find myself recovered at step 12. Okay, so back to this paragraph that we were on, it says here, in this statement, again, we're at the end of the first letter in the second page of the doc op, starting in the paragraph there, the physician, and that second sentence, it says, in this statement, he confirms that we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe the body of the alcoholic is quite abnormal of the mind. And the reason why I went back to that is the word torture. I encourage you all to look up, I love looking up words and definitions in the dictionary. I encourage you to look up the word torture, because that's what this disease did to me. I don't know about you, but that's what this disease did to me. And one of the things my sponsor had me do when we first started working together, when I finally really committed myself to this program to do it in totality, she said, I want you to write a first step. I want you to write your history of compulsive eating on paper. And that was important, because what it showed me was the torture of compulsive eating in my life and how truly powerless I was, especially once I put those binge food substances into my system. And no matter how hard I tried, and no matter how hard I wanted, or no matter how much willpower I had, I still couldn't stop. So that was incredibly powerful for me. So I wanted to make sure that I went back to that, you know, that I do have that abnormal reaction. Again, down at the bottom of that page, the last paragraph, it says, more often than not, it is imperative that a man's brain be cleared before he is approached, meaning that we have to be clear about our food plans and our abstinence so that my head is clear enough to start the process of working the steps. And I need the steps to change, right? Because the greater aspect beyond the physical allergy is the mental obsession. Again, he talks about it more in this chapter, but the reality is the reason why the doctor, who was a famous doctor who had dried out many hundreds of thousands of drugs, could not fix is the aspect of the mental obsession. You know, Dr. Silkworth dried out many, but all they did was walk out the door and then drink again, because we weren't dealing with the aspect of the mental obsession. And for me, what the mental obsession means is that if I know that when I put those foods into my substance, they're going to create this phenomenon, this allergic reaction to want more, and I'm not going to be able to stop, why is it that no matter what I know, no matter how hard I try, that I found myself standing in front of the refrigerator, 5 bites into a binge, going, how did I get here? Because my willpower is not sufficient, because my thinking, my brain, and the way I was wired constantly drove me to the food, constantly. And the big part of the second part in the big book that I really want to emphasize is in my third edition, it's XV, but that's, let's see, if we're going on to the next page after Dr. Silkworth's letter, there is a second letter in there. And this is the third page where it says at the top of the page, the doctor writes. And then the last sentence, it says, the alcoholic ought to be freed from his physical craving for liquor. Turn the page. That last paragraph is the why. I call it the why. And it says on that last paragraph, so I guess we're 3 pages in, it says, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontent until they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking, for us, a few bites of our binge foods. Binge foods which we see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink or eat again. This is repeated over and over unless this person can experience an entire psychic change. There is very little hope for recovery. So it's really important that I understand, you know, in those first couple years in OA, I stopped eating a lot. Like I had like 2, 3, 4 months, I dried out. I didn't have those allergic substances in my body, but I still relapsed. Because I wanted that sense of ease and comfort that came from taking the bites and the food that I liked, right? I was uncomfortable living in my own skin. They call it the hole in the soul that I tried to fill with a knife and a fork, right? I didn't get the instruction manual that told me how to live life. So I made up my own. And it made me very uncomfortable and at odds with the world around me. So without the psychic change that I've just read about, which is the process of working the 12 steps, I'm just a dry drunk. I'm just someone without my substance, but I haven't changed. Up here, nothing has changed. In here, nothing has changed. So for those of you on the phone, I'm pointing to my head and to my chest, right? This is a twofold illness, but the ravages are physical, emotional, and spiritual. So without the transformative process of working the 12 steps, I am not equipped with the tools to combat my thinking that constantly says, it's okay to take that next bite. You know, that five bites into a binge going, how did I get there? Those were my blackout binges. But I also was a queen of rationalization. I have a disease. What is the saying? I have a disease that talks to me in my own language. I have a disease that tells me it's okay. I have a disease that has a built-in forgetter. I have a disease that says, it's okay. You can do that diet on Monday. It'll be all right. I mean, I'm a recovered bulimic. How do you rationalize sticking your finger down your throat as same behavior? And yet that's exactly what I did. And that's how sick my thinking is. A sick mind cannot heal a sick mind. And I had to humbly accept that I was not only powerless, my body, once ingesting those substances, that I was also powerless in my thinking. And I needed to have a different way to change. And I needed a higher power because I couldn't do it for myself. And again, we began that process of working the steps and then developing what a higher power was. Because at that point, I was firmly agnostic. But she said, Amy, I don't care if you think it's Jesus, Buddha, or the universal vibes of a tree. I don't care as long as you know it's not you and it's greater than you. And by December of 87, oh yeah, they say the other three D's of the disease, denial, delusion, and defiance. And then when you're dying, desperate, and doomed, you come to the program. And that's where I was. I could no longer fix me because of the mental obsession. Again, the mental obsession drives me there. The physical allergy keeps me there in a vicious, torturous cycle that without the power of my higher power, whom I choose to call God, the transformative power of working these steps. She said, you know, my first sponsor said to me, she said, you know, in Overeaters Anonymous, we don't think our way into a new way of acting and believing. We act our way there. And I just want you to take the action steps. This is an action-oriented program. So are you willing to take those steps with me? And I said, yes. And boom, I'm done. 1, 2, and 3 steps done right there. And then we went ahead with the business of the inventory work. But all of that was the prerequisite of understanding what was the true nature of my disease and my powerlessness. And I think that, you know, Bill was a genius in how he wrote. And together with he and Dr. Silkworth in this chapter, they repeat over and over again this idea of an allergy that creates the phenomenon of craving and the mental obsession. And that was the prerequisite for me for understanding, one, who and what I was, admitting that powerlessness, understanding I would need to take action because I couldn't fix myself. And that took time and a process. The other saying in the rooms is don't walk out 5 minutes before the miracle. Keep coming back. Keep listening. You know, keep letting people talk program to you till it finally sinks in. I'm not saying I didn't go to Overeaters Anonymous meetings where I didn't hear this, but I guess I wasn't ready to hear. I don't know. But if you are new here, let me try to be as clear as I possibly can that that's what this illness is as I see it and as it's laid out in the big book. And without a higher power and without these 12 steps, I don't stand a chance. And that's the same for me today at 35 plus years in recovered as it did on day one. My plan and my work for my daily spiritual disciplines, you know, are still the same today as they were back then. I mean, obviously life has happened, but I work a spiritual program. I work the steps every day. Abstinence is incredibly important to me. I work the tools. To me, this is an all-in program of tools, steps, and traditions. You know, I can be stark raving abstinent, right, without working the steps, but I can't work the steps without the tools. And one of those is the abstinence so that I am not creating that phenomenon of more. This is what they call the disease of more. And those to me are the basics that are repeated over and over again in this chapter. And, you know, I'm just going to wrap up with a couple of things here. Again, I just don't know what chapters. This is the third edition, but it's XXVII. And I'll just read it slowly. All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, is a manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. So what that says to me is that I'm as powerless over those ingredients now as I was 35 years ago. Like once a pickle, never a cucumber, right? That doesn't change. And that's a foundational principle for me. I am never going to get so well that I can then eat my foods in moderation, right? That's just not going to happen. It's like telling someone, well, now you've been sober, you can just go drink in moderation. That does not work for me. And I don't see it anywhere in the big book where it says that that's a possibility. And then I'm just going to wrap up on the last page. On the last page of the doc op, it says, I earnestly advise, in the last sentence, it says, I earnestly advise every alcoholic to read this book through and through. Perhaps he came to scoff, he may remain to pray. And I can tell you, when I first came to Overeaters Anonymous and, you know, these ensuing years, there were moments where I said, you've got to be kidding me. I don't understand this. I don't get it. I don't want to do it. You know, I didn't start weighing and measuring for a number of years. And that to me was like rowing a boat backwards to China, right? You know, I mean, like, what? Why? But I had to be willing, because I knew that this was the last house on the block for me, that I couldn't fix myself. And if I can't fix myself, you all better have the solution. Because if you don't have the solution, I am doomed. And I'm just going to stray from the doc op to my favorite page in the big book. And I'm going to read it. This is my third edition. It's all rebound. I'm not saying I'm all that. It's just that I study this book. This is my third edition. Here's my fourth edition, because I'm old and I need big letters. I have my third edition over here that's also bound, because I study this literature so that I can continue to reinforce who and what I am and how I can change, right? And my favorite page is in There Is a Solution. And it's on page 17. And it says, the last paragraph, the tremendous fact for every one of us, that means you, that means me, that means all of us, is that we have discovered a common solution. I know it may seem complicated, but there's actually no secret code, folks. It's just the 12 steps. Put the food down, work the 12 steps. It's really that simple. Not easy, but it's that simple. So there's no secret code. It's a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree. I'm not telling you this because I'm spouting the theory. You know, this is my experience and thousands of others' experiences who have recovered. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from compulsive eating or alcoholism. It's a fact, folks. If I can do it, you can do it. And the doc op gives me the preface to understand who and what I am and why I need to do the steps that I need to do. And I'm so grateful to be here, because one of the biggest ones is doing what we are all doing today, is being of service and carrying the message to the still suffering compulsive eater. Back then, Bill, Dr. Silkworth, Bob, they didn't have the steps. They just had step one, I'm powerless. Now go carry the message, right? Because they knew that that was what was going to keep them sober, sane, happy, and alive. And I'm grateful today. You all have helped me do that today. And with that, I will pass.